this. My name is Andy Moore. Friends, welcome back. If you're watching on video, you might notice we're not. This is a democracy den. We're in the office of my friend Kyle Loveless. Kyle, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
Kyle and I met, 10 years ago, I guess, when Let's Fix This first started. You were in the legislature. Kyle, you're now the vice president of a company called Eyes Over. Mm-hmm. You guys do sentiment analysis around like social media and stuff. It's kind of related to polling, which is what we're going to talk about today.
It takes their intentions and their feelings and what they post online and kind of aggregates it and puts it together. So
yeah, I'm super interested in this. But let's give our listeners a bit of a background about you and how we got here.
Yeah.
I'll let you be the storyteller, but kind of tell us your background in Oklahoma politics and how you got here.
Well, it's kind of funny because, you know, as kids, we rebel a little bit against our parents. My parents were entrepreneurs and business owners, and they hated the government regulations, government taxes, EPA, any government problems, they hated it. Mm-hmm. So what do? I get into politics.
Right.
And so I didn't get into drugs or alcohol or any of that stuff. And so I worked in D.C. for Congressman Istook for 7 years.
Okay.
And worked in D.C. for 4, got my degree from Georgetown. And then moved back. I was campaign manager for him for 2 cycles. For Istook. Then when he ran for governor, I was a consultant to that race. And that got me out of working for one person and working for many.
Yeah.
And so that race, that cycle in 2006, I helped like 4 or 5 different statewide races and different things. And then,
do you believe it's been 20 years?
It's been crazy. Like I literally, like I've talked to friends and Istook staffers, it's like, really? They're like, but that's so, it just goes by.
Yeah.
And so it's funny because we've got new people that have started for us. They have no idea what MAP stood for. They had no idea. Like, I have to do like an Oklahoma indoctrination for the people that move here, our new staffers that we moved to Oklahoma.
That's, I do want to interrupt because I think that history is important. I say this all the time. I'm, you know, constantly learning things about Oklahoma political history.
Right.
And our state is not that old.
Right.
But when you just learn a little bit, even just what's happened in Oklahoma since 1990.
Right.
Even since 2000. There's been some really important shifts, some really important initiatives or campaigns or political personalities that I think colors who we are today. And if you don't have that history,
correct,
then you're always wondering, how did we get here? And
well,
it's fascinating.
Just the other day, we were talking about something, and I said something about maps. And they're like, why do you keep bringing that up? It's the app and the phone. I'm like, stop, what? and like, I literally was like, what? So Googled up on YouTube, like, there's an old documentary on the history of maps. Made everybody watch it, and then I took everybody down to the memorial, walked everybody through it. It's like, okay, this you need to have an Oklahoma history lesson.
Yeah.
And so just because if we're, you know, anyway, so that's kind of the – so back to me. So after working for Capitol Hill, I got involved in some other races, and then at one point I sat there and I thought, you know, I am interested in actually putting myself out there.
Right.
Getting people elected was fun. You know, that kind of thing. But I was just like, I think I have some skill set that I want to get done that's not being addressed. And so I ran for office, ran for state senate. It was an open seat, 6 people in it. And I was outspent 4-1 and made it to a runoff and lost by 100 votes or less than 100 votes to Steve Russell, who went on to be Congressman Steve Russell because he caught Saddam. And he was a war hero, and I was just some guy.
Right.
And basically, you know, I pushed him to the limit, made it to a runoff, but still came up short.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't like politics. And so he didn't get along well with people at the state senate and didn't stay there long, served one term. And then he called me up 4 years later and said, you know what, I'm not going to run again. And you're a good guy, whatever. If you want to run again, go ahead. So I did, and here's my little asterisk to Oklahoma history. So we've moved the dates of filing period.
Uh-huh.
So at the time, filing was way earlier. When I filed, no one else filed because I was the senator-elect right then.
Oh, right.
At the end of filing, I was the only person that filed, senator-elect, for 10 months. I'm the longest-serving senator-elect in Oklahoma history.
Oh, that's funny.
So that's my little asterisk to history. So for 9-10 months, I'm going everywhere as the state senator, constituent issues, whatever. Yeah. Because
did he resign or did he just
no he just said he wasn't running again and you know and so and then years later he ran for Congress and won and so but anyway it's just kind of one of those Oklahoma history stories.
Remind me what district he's.
It was South, it was Senate District 45, South Oklahoma City. Yeah. Racino's the senator now, yeah. And South Oklahoma City, parts of Moore and Mustang, and it was a weird district. And right. They've rechanged it since then, but at the time went from all the way out in Mustang, out in Canadian County, to the Native American Cultural Center, the First American
just south of downtown, right?
So I was the senator that helped get that money for that.
Right.
So that was one of the things that I was able to help with.
Something you can hang your legacy hat on.
That's right. That's right.
That's interesting. And the same, what's funny about that is when you're talking about being the senator-elect for 10 months, one of the current House reps from Southside, Arturo Alonso, had a similar thing. He, his predecessor resigned.
Yeah.
And he won pretty easily and then was like, kind of hanging out for a while being like, I don't even, this is brand new to me. And really got thrust into it,
right.
Without much opposition. I think he was the only one that filed and kind of just won
yep.
right away. And
yep.
So that's interesting.
Yep. So after I did that, and then after I resigned and I left the state Senate, got involved, I was working with my parents on the family business, custom boots and shoes and stuff.
Yeah.
February 2020, before the thunder shut down with COVID.
Right.
I say the thunder because that was the big, I get 2 weeks before that, I get a call from my dad, and he basically calls the entire staff in and says, we had an outside buyer in the last 2 weeks, offered us millions for a golden sure. parachute, but they don't want anybody involved. So the family business shut down, and in 2020, I had to get a real job,
right.
or another job.
Right.
And so that's when I worked for Bill Shepard at Soonerpole.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So I started at Shepard at Soonerpole. I worked there for 2.5 years and then became his chief operating officer. And then when we can get into it, it was the pollster that showed Hoffmeister that was going to win.
Right. Right and, up until the
correct. The right up until the very end.
Yeah.
And because that was we lost they lost a bunch of clients because of that. And I was let go. And so a couple months later, I ran into Chris Wilson, the CEO at the time of WPA Intelligence. And we start talking, and I start talking about Oklahoma stuff. And he's just like, I don't have anybody in my office like you. Would you want to come work? And so that's we worked it out. And then earlier this year, we switched to Stratus Intelligence and eyes over. So that's kind of where I come from.
So WPA Intelligence, for any of our listeners who might be familiar from a few years ago, even from the last cycle, right? Is that name is no more, but now it's
right.
Stratus Intelligence. Yeah. And,
well, that company's gone away.
Okay,
and so there's still some other people that they started their own, they changed it or whatever. Yeah. But Chris and I and some others went on. So
nice. I have found this, as a latecomer to politics, constant churn of lobbying firms and polling firms every 4 years get reinvented.
Yeah.
People leave one, go to another. Just this week I saw
Cockcroft
joining the Leopard group.
It's no longer
a new name, Sanitas or something. And
yeah.
I was like, okay, this is the way it always happens. The McSpadden and Robinson,
yep.
all of them have had several iterations of their thing. And I think
It's a small world.
It's a small world, and I think it reflects shifting needs and interests,
and also you have because you have like the Dunlap and Pat Hall group,
right?
And they've been around forever.
Yeah.
And at the time, you have to think rewind a little bit. They were like the first of its kind of a Republican and a Democrat working together and staying afloat no matter who was in charge. That's
right.
kind of been a model since then. So
yeah.
You've had people like that, like Amber Integrated and others, pop up that
right.
different coalitions. And
yeah.
It is interesting. And every couple of 2-4 years, they break up and,
yeah.
And so.
Well, we all get bored, too. Like
and there's new legislators. Like Cockcroft was in,
yeah.
Doing other things and
yeah.
involved with Governor Stitt's Secretary of State. And
yeah.
then,
Policy director, he just moves around and no, that's the way it is in sports,
right?
Too, there's a lot of analogies we made there. That's fascinating. So, okay, so now that brings us up to today, with Eyes Over.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what Eyes Over does.
Okay, so to know what Eyes Over does, you have to take kind of a little bit of history lesson into what polling was. Okay, so what polling was, and everybody knows if you've ever taken any U.S. history class, or your student of history, whatever, Truman versus Dewey, you know, in the newspaper, you know, whatever, Dewey beats Truman. Well, that was a seminal moment because before then, polling was done basically by magazine subscriptions and door-to-door visits.
Right.
So literally, they weren't like figuring out if someone was an active voter, likely voter, or any of that. They were just literally going door to door to door. Okay, well, we have learned since then, and then also magazine subscriptions. And so, and then the third factor that made that polling so historically wrong, it was they quit polling 10 days before the actual election. And 10 days then is not like now. They didn't have early voting then.
Right.
It was 99% of people voted on election day.
Right.
And now you have early voting, you have whatever. So that was one of the first big seminal moments of polling. So that changed how polling was done. From then until up until, and I would say in the last 2 or 3 years is when we've changed. But up until then, we've changed it to like we take someone's voting history, and then they're randomly assigned a number, and then they get picked out, and you balance it by matching, make sure that you match the demographics. You match the geography, you match the age, you match the sex, and you match their education to make sure, like in Oklahoma, you don't just take Northwest Oklahoma City voters.
Right.
Like you could take 500 people and get a poll of that. That's not a poll. That's not a sample of the state.
Right.
Or, you know, Northeast Tulsa. It's just not the same.
Right.
So we've learned to balance it demographically and that type of thing. So that's what polling what has become over the years.
Yeah, a lot now, more math involved.
Correct.
For a long time, yeah.
What's made it some when the CEO of IO's over won pollster of the year a few years back by the AAPC for the Glenn Youngkin race.
Right.
In his speech and his thing, he kind of gave it was kind of controversial. He basically said polling is flawed after winning the pollster of the year award. It's kind of why I like Chris, but. He got up there and said, polling is flawed. We have to look for the next thing. That's what Eyes Over is.
Okay.
So, and here, going back to just 25 years ago, like we talked about, 2000, to get a poll of 500 Oklahomans, it only took, you know, 3,000 to 5,000 calls to get that 500. It takes close to 50,000 calls to get 500 now.
Yeah.
So just think about that. One, cost, and two, are you really getting everybody?
Right.
Are you really getting the younger voters? Are you really getting the older voters who now just won't answer the phone?
Right.
If it's not somebody they know, they're not answering.
Yeah.
So what, and we have learned also, studies have shown the last two presidential cycles, there is a Trump effect and there is a Bernie Sanders effect. And by that, in 2016, you had the Trump voters that were ashamed and didn't want to say to public pollsters, hey, I like Trump. And, you know, the plumber or the whatever that normally doesn't get involved,
right,
doesn't have a voter history to back it up,
right,
but you know what, I'm voting for Trump because I like him. Okay, and that's on the right. And on the left, the Bernie Sanders places of the country that I really like Bernie Sanders, but I'm not telling anybody.
Right.
And so you had that dynamic going. But we have found through Eyes Over, people post things what they truly believe. Now, there's sarcasm and there's sometimes some trolling going back and forth, and there's bots, of course. But with AI, we're able to determine, okay, and we were able to determine, like 2 years ago in the Ted Cruz race in Texas, people posting, hey, Joe Biden's fixing the wall and fixing you know, immigration.
Right.
Well, that was a Trump supporter being sarcastic. Well, their social posts with AI, we were able to determine, okay, once you teach it that, oh, you look at their previous posts,
right,
okay, well, then you learn.
Out of character.
So, right. Yeah. So what we do at Eyes Over for chambers of commerce, corporations, candidates, and causes, too many C's there, but whatever, we take what people post. You can give us a geographic reason, whether it be the entire United States, whether it's, you know, a congressional district or statewide. And we, when someone tweets or posts something or comments on an RS on a newspaper feed or comments on a story on a different story, we collect that. It's basically an aggregator. Give it a score. The AI combines it all together, and then we're able to show, okay, This is where the sentiment shows where what's working for them, what's not working for them. This is how they changed. Like, for instance, one of the examples that we've used a lot, and we provide one of our biggest clients that we provide daily reports is the White House. Well, if you remember correctly, in February, whenever there was the Potomac plane crash.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in one day.
Is that just this year?
Yeah. I know. It seems like it's like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But when the plane went down, Trump made just a flippant comment. Oh, it was DEI.
Right.
Well, most people have trust in their air traffic controllers, or at least they want to.
Right.
At least, you know, and so we were able to show, and we noticed like a 7 to 8 point drop, like overnight, in public sentiment towards Trump. And our next report, we sent it to the White House, and they go like, what's going on? With our system, we're able to ask it, which is an internal proprietary system, hey, what? Well, it pinpoint most people like and support their air traffic controllers. When he says DEI hire, it's like, whoa, we don't.
Everyone just kind of wrote it off and said, oh, this guy's.
So we informed the White House, nope, it was that comment. You notice he's never said it again.
Right, yeah.
So that's one of the things where you can get ahead of the curve with our system instead of being, you know, responding and whatever. Now, Trump is Trump. You know, one of the other bigger dips that he makes, you know, is when he posted the picture of him being the next pope.
Right.
You know, he had a big dip there with Catholics. Well, that doesn't take a rocket science.
Right, right.
So, anyway.
How interesting. I was aware of sentiment analysis more in the media, right? So, like, even when I ran a ballot initiative campaign a few years ago, you know, our comms firm did that kind of checking, which was really like, you know, reading a news article, kind of scoring it one way or the other for you or against you.
Yeah.
But this is much more granular, and it's about
correct
just individual voters.
Yeah,
right?
And the way our system works, we provide our clients with a dashboard. It's very interesting because it'll be like up and down or whatever, and then on the right will be like the terms and the concepts that are happening organically. Like if something's popping that we weren't even aware of, or some, you know, property taxes or whatever, it just pops up and it's like, this is like the number one issue.
Right.
And then on the left, we have a system where we can give it buckets. Okay, how many people are talking about this issue? And it will tell us. And then, so it's, and so we, what we do is we provide our clients, we provide it to one. They get access to their dashboard, to their account, and then we provide them a weekly or monthly report.
Like a summary.
Yeah. So.
How do you avoid, like, how do you validate this and, like, avoid false positives on certain things?
Well, a lot of it, excuse me, is, and to his credit, was when Musk took over X, what changed Twitter, whatever, part of him taking over was finding out who was bots and whatever. And so we're able to, by getting rid of them, we're able to validate everybody's actual ones. And so through AI and through the internal systems that he's doing it, and Meta has as well. Because they realize they will lose advertisers if people lose faith that it's just bots.
Right. So the whole dead internet theory, which I'm sure you're familiar with, but in case listeners aren't, it's the idea that the internet is increasingly becoming just bots or AI generated content, that it's not actual people talking to one another, it's just computers talking to one another, and there's no people there.
We have found, in at least in Oklahoma and in other places, in other, like, we're helping with the Maine governor's race and Alaska and some other races, we can find in geographic regions micro influencers. So instead of people are looking for the next Joe Rogan and whatever,
right,
that's fine and dandy, there's nothing wrong. We have found though, if someone has a 5,000 followers, but those are like red meat conservatives,
right?
Well, we want to make sure we know who those people are,
right?
And so, and we want to make sure that that when they say something, who it affects and why,
right?
And we're able to do that.
Yeah. So by, you don't necessarily have to validate to every individual.
Correct.
You can find those people who are kind of leaders.
Yep. Yep.
That's interesting. You know, when I started Let's Fix This, one of your fellow legislators at the time told me that two things matter at the state capitol: money and influence.
Oh.
And I said, I don't have any money. And I said, I don't think I'm the influence. And he's like, but you got, you know, 100 people to come up here,
right,
who might not have come otherwise. That's influence. And I thought, that is so tiny. But
well,
it turns
remember,
out, it's not much.
And, you know, and I've told this publicly and whatever, if you believe in a cause, and you can, you know, it's the quote of, you know, I always butcher it, but those that change the world are those that are the small numbers that are committed.
Yeah.
I always forget that
yeah,
quote,
yeah.
But
nothing. No, it's on our website.
Yes, I know. Yeah. I feel like an idiot. But yeah. As a legislator, I get 5-10 calls. It wasn't necessarily me because I always consider myself a little bit different,
right?
Because I would realize, but most legislators, 90% of legislators, you get 5, 10, 20 calls,
yeah.
They're shaking in their boots,
right? Right.
And so they were worried that like the district's crying out, 5, 10 calls, really?
Right.
Of actual voters, of people in their district,
right?
It freaks them out.
Yeah. Yeah, really, change is possible with a lot less effort than we think,
right?
Which is so funny. I think we. You know, all the time. In fact, I had a meeting this morning where people were talking about this, and there's always a sentiment of, yeah, but does any of this really matter? And it's like, well, not
it
if
does.
You don't try, but it really does if you just do a little bit more than
yep.
you're doing.
Yeah, a little bit of effort goes a long way.
Yeah. So it sounds like most of the sentiment that you guys analyze is mm-hmm. based on social media, and I assume you could pull in some other voter data and trends and that kind of
well,
stuff.
Well, what we do is because we match it because that's what, okay, so another service and or product that we offer, we still do traditional polling and we still do predictive analytics. So predictive analytics are basically if you're wanting to find out, like, okay, for governor's race of Oklahoma, who is going to be voting? You can't just rely on voting history. You have to rely on things that not just as it is, but also who you think will be voting.
Right.
And also, if given the right information, you can prompt these people to vote.
Right.
And so that's one of those things where we marry both, you know, consumer data, which we, you know, it's one of those things where because so much data is publicly available, and the story goes, here's the story, and I've actually checked out, it's actually real, so it's not an urban legend. So this teenage girl goes to Target, buys a few things, and her parents start noticing pregnancy tests on their ads coming up.
Right.
And they're like, what in the world? And they're getting, and then they start getting pregnancy and car seat coupons
yeah.
in the mail.
Right.
So they go to Target and they're asking the guy, well, what happened? Well, she bought like some food. That's what happened.
Right. My baby food all of a sudden.
Correct.
Yeah.
They found, and the story goes, basically, Target knew that the kid was pregnant
before the parents. That's terrifying and funny. But
but the point is, we take that data, and what we do is we wet it with voter history.
Right.
And then, okay, so if this guy on the truck watches Hulu versus this, gets iceberg lettuce versus arugula lettuce, well, that guy's a conservative or whatever.
Right, right.
And that's how you wet all that together. Okay, this is where we need to... This is going to be diehard people we need to get out to vote. These are people that we need. It breaks it into so many smaller segments.
Yeah.
Because with 4 million people, you're talking 800,000 voters and blah, 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 blah. No, yes, but there's so many small pockets in between.
Right.
So the level of data really is granular to where, and that's part of the reason why Governor Stitt won. And against Hoffmeister, and then, you know, we don't have Governor Cornett or,
right.
Lamb, you know, and so... Or even Governor Largent from 20 years ago.
Right, right.
So
that's fascinating. You know, some of the legislators the last couple of years have been talking a lot about data privacy.
Mm-hmm.
Not as a direct threat to your business, but just
correct.
The idea that we all can be reduced to ones and zeros in a database somewhere.
Well, people forget, and the deadline's coming soon. You remember what fight there was for real ID?
Yes.
No one seems to care now.
No.
Because like I flew the other day, or went on a business trip, and they were like, "You don't have your real ID." It's like, "No," and they were like, "Oh, the deadline's coming soon." I go, "Oh crap, I better get it." Yeah. I didn't even know; I forgot.
Right.
Apparently, November 1st is the deadline, hard deadline. They'll let you fly now, but apparently, November 1st,
right?
You're out of luck.
I don't have mine either. I use my passport because I keep forgetting to go. But
so I gotta get me a real ID. Yeah, but I remember, and it was even before I was in the legislature. People having
it was like Mark of the Beast.
Yeah,
yeah. We should have done this podcast in line at the tag agency and killed two birds with one stone. Well, I mean, AI is all the rage. I mean, it's baked into everything. I saw an ad yesterday, Kyle, for a robot guinea pig that uses AI, and after 50 days of petting it and talking to it, it develops one of 4 million personalities to be your digital pet. I think maybe that's overkill, but it is certainly changing the world rapidly, and it's changing the work you do rapidly. You've already referenced it in here. Where do you see it going next, if you have a crystal ball?
Well, with politics, it's hard to say, because we use it as a tool. Like, for instance, we had a report that we sent to a client, and it was like our first weeks on the job, and it literally said, like, first line, because we have a set for all our reports, is things that are working, things that are resonating with people, your base, things that are reaching those that you know, not your supporters, but you whatever. And then, like, it was like things that can be changed or whatever. Like, the first one on there said, quit being corrupt. Well, nobody put their eyes on it, no pun intended, and we sent it out, and it's like, well, and so the AI just took it and was like, that's what the sentiment said.
Right.
And so, you know, if it's one of those things where you have to have the human element, so far as what we can tell, or it will get to be a problem. And for instance, like the large sets of data that we used to do just 10 years ago took weeks to do.
Right.
Now in hours.
Yeah.
In hours. And it's like, you know, so that's going to be something that just constantly turns over. So
how interesting. So, you know, we've talked a little bit about polling, how it used to be done, talking to people. And now I know that there are pollsters who are creating essentially like AI analogs for actual voters, and then pulling the database rather than the people, because the database, there's no phone call, they just pull it out. They're essentially like little bots that are designed to mirror Kyle and Andy and whoever else. And then you've got this other like sentiment analysis that is looking at actual people and what people are actually saying out there. And yet when you open the newspaper, or even this week in the Oklahoma news, there's conversations about, you know, which gubernatorial candidate is ahead of the others on the Republican ticket. Do you think that we will see sentiment analysis, or even this like AI polling, become not just like more mainstream, but the default way that we are assessing horse race business around politics?
I think it's going to change definitely over time. The question is how fast, because like I said, we still do traditional polling, and we put out the poll showing McCall with the lead, and you know, other firms said put something out. They're going to release a poll next week that shows Drummond in the lead. So, you know, to me, it's one of those things where predictive analytics, sentiment analysis—that's kind of the thing where that separates us from others,
right,
other pollsters, both here locally and nationally.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we're the people, the key figures that got the race right in 2018 and then also 22.
Right.
So, and then also with Stephanie Bice versus Terry Neese. And so three of those races are, you know, evidence of you have to be able to do the everything correctly or the results come out wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, that, you know, for the Hoffmeister Stitt race, I'm talking every pollster was publicly saying it was a tight race. WPA and my boss's firm previous was not.
Right.
And so, you know, he's gone on the record since then saying it wasn't even, according to their internals, that never got below 5 points.
Sure.
So, and then it would dip and then would go back up, and it ended up at 30. They put out a poll on Halloween night 4 years ago or whenever it was, and it was 13 points, and the governor won by 13.9. So he's off less than 1 point.
Yeah. That's wild. Well, I mean, a poll is a snapshot
of
what voters are thinking right now.
Right.
And, you know, there's lots of factors that go into it. The sentiment analysis is more looking at trends over
time. It's real time.
Yeah.
It's real time.
You guys are doing it daily for the White House. Like, it's a way to stay on top of it.
There are ways, and we even have on our dashboard, so on certain bar graphs, you can see where there's a certain what it's saying, where it is right now, and then determining on the time of day, AI will predict this is where it's going.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it'll on high traffic days, you'll see at noon, it's like the AI expect it to go up really big.
Yeah.
When they when there's big press events planned for that night, it's there's a big gap.
Right.
And so the AI is ahead of the game on that. If you're not, that's one of the things is if you're not doing that in your campaign now, then you know you may be left behind.
It's not even just a prediction, or it's not even just a snapshot of what's happening today.
Yeah.
Or I mean, a poll really is a look back, right? We did a poll the last 10 days.
Yeah.
Here's what it said.
Yep.
But what you're able to do is start looking ahead.
Yep. Even.
Does that? How often does that trend, that predicted trend, come to pass? Is it pretty?
It's very accurate.
Yeah.
And we have found it, and it's, we use it every day. So.
Yeah. I know a lot of your clients are Republicans. You're a Republican, and so
we trend conservative. We say center right. We do help candidates in nonpartisan races when it's not Republican Democrat. It's just you know like city council and mayor's right. races, and certain things like that. We also do international. We had several clients overseas that we have people in Latin America, and we have some races that we've helped with in Europe, and so
yeah. Is that because that's just your connections, or is there a different methodology used for
the methodology? Is what we say. What's interesting, my boss, Chris Wilson, was at a seminar at the Harvard School of Government last year during the presidential election. And at the time, it was before the Biden thing, and the Biden head of technology or whatever. Came to Chris afterwards, was like, we don't have anything like this.
Yeah.
So it was interesting because, you know, and that was kind of an interesting perspective. I'm sure that there are now, but.
There is like kind of a technological arms race between the two major parties.
Correct. I mean,
it has been for a long time, right? Like,
well,
file access and relational organizing.
President Obama took a head and shoulders leap because he trusted his team and they were ones that believed in it.
Yeah.
So in 2016, and bring up the Cruz raid, when Cruz ran, when it was, and Chris Wilson was head of analytics for that campaign as well. And people forget Cruz won Oklahoma,
yeah.
Trump didn't.
Right.
But
it was Cruz and Bernie, right, that won the primaries.
Yeah. Yeah. That being said, Cruz believed in the analytics and that type of thing as well, and he believed in the staff. And, you know, it has, and so when he implemented it into their team, every cycle it becomes more and more prevalent.
Yeah. How fascinating.
Because, like, for instance, Obama, when he first ran, had like 5 or 10 or people. And then when he ran for a reelect, it was like he had 30 or 40 people.
Yeah.
And now there's, you know, the campaign they had last time was like 50 or 60. And so, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of the races you do, or statewide, mm-hmm. or congressional races, or higher, and I would imagine it's harder to like find a sufficient sample size of sentiment for like down ballot races.
Well, that's
like a state legislative
race. That's one of the things that when I brought up earlier of bringing about costs, it's very difficult to do a scientific poll of a base larger than like a congressional seat.
Right.
Because you have to make 50, 60, 70,000 calls.
Right.
Well, if the district only has 70,000 people,
right.
I don't care how many times you call them, you're not going to get the people on the phone.
Yeah.
And so that's the, you have pollsters out there saying, well, we've got this out there and the margin of error is this. It's like, And so it's becoming almost impossible to do a scientifically based, statistically balanced poll in, you know, Senate and House races.
Yeah.
In Oklahoma. In Texas, their House districts are the size of congressional districts.
Right, right.
So that's easy to do.
Right.
California, same thing. Florida, same thing. In bigger states, you can do it on the state House, state Senate rate. In Oklahoma, it's not so much.
Right. And most people don't even know who their state legislators are.
Correct.
So the margin of error is pretty
or
big.
If they do, they ask you how D.C. is and how fighting, when I was there, how fighting Obama was.
Right.
Like, what?
Right.
And you get to the point where you just got to be polite and just don't correct them.
Right. Right.
So,
yeah, that's interesting. Looking back over your career, particularly with polling and analytics, what do you think are the biggest lessons that you would share with someone who is, you know, I know we've got some younger folks who listen to the show that are like in college or just out of college,
yeah.
and are looking at how do I make a career path here? This seems to be an area of growth. What are the lessons you would share with them?
Well, I've been blessed in that I worked for McFerrin at CMA.
Yeah.
And was in their call center when I was in college at OU, and then worked for Bill Schaffer at Sunipol, and then now work for, so there's like only one firm, you know, major firm that I haven't worked for in Oklahoma. So I've worked for basically everybody. The thing that I always, and I've told my daughter this, and which is, and I've told people, if you enjoy politics or want to get involved in politics, find a candidate and like block, take a vacation or block things off and campaign for that person. Go door to door, be their driver, do whatever, spend hours with them, get to know them like the back of your hand. Do what you can to get them elected, win, lose, or draw. That's the best education you can get for politics.
Yeah.
And once you get, if you like someone right, left, center, that's what you need to do. I've always wanted, and I've always been jealous of it, and I've told my wife, at some point, and I don't know when, but at some point I would like to take, like, if I ever get enough PTO time, a month off, go to New Hampshire, go to Iowa.
Right.
In the middle of president's time, pick a candidate and be like, let's go.
Right.
And, you know, because I, and get it in the nitty gritty of it and just be in it elbows deep and just like,
yeah.
Go to, you know, I've always wanted to do that.
Yeah.
And so, never had the chance. But anyway, so that, I would say that's the best piece of advice, because once you get in and once you, you'll learn more in that short period of time than any class. And, it'll give you an experience to move you into, because politics is cyclical. Yeah. One year it's hot, next year it's not. Whether it's corporate or whatever, it will give you the skill set to that you can apply to others.
Yeah.
So that's what I would say.
That's like, this is what political nerds would do with their Make-A-Wish.
Yep. Yeah.
I'd go to Iowa. Yeah.
Yeah.
Work there. That's fascinating.
Although I've never been a fan of caucuses. I hate it. I don't like the idea of, okay, I don't care about voting. You got to show up at night. What?
Yeah. It feels like a fifth grade, like getting to know you exercise.
Yep.
I went to a caucus
like
in Texas
speed dating.
One time. Yeah. In 2016, actually, I wasn't registered down there, but I went to observe with some family that were registered,
yeah.
And I was just like, this is wild.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I've never been a fan of caucuses, but that being said, I would still like to go and learn.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and so.
I have some colleagues from a national organization called More Equitable Democracy that have a documentary coming out.
Yeah.
They took a trip to Ireland, to Northern Ireland, to like be observers over there of their election system. They use proportional representation, I think, and ranked choice vote. It's a whole different system. And I was talking to them what they learned when they came back, and he was like, Andy, they, after the polls close, they bring all the ballots into one room, and the whole town's in there, and they just like dump them on tables, and the counting happens right there with everyone involved, and you know, all of our security and fraud alerts going off. And he said, even for us standing there, you could tell that there was so much like cultural trust in one another. They're like, you couldn't bring anything in, and no one would let you leave with anything. So there's no
That's
way
funny.
To like fraudulently. It was just neighbors like hand counting all this stuff, doing multiple checks to get. And I was like, that's like not practical in most modern elections. Certainly not nationwide here, but the like sentiment around it of like, what if our elections had so much community buy-in that we believe in this process enough that we would spend our Tuesday evenings at the high school gym.
Well, I've always hated our system in the sense of nominating systems. Why is it Iowa and New Hampshire get the birthright? What the crap is that? Two of the whitest, you know, most liberal, and what? So I've always have this mindset of we need to regionalize it. One, every 4 years, it's like the Super Bowl. It rotates around. The Southwest gets it for one, and then 4 years later, the Northeast gets it, and then that you could have both. You could have like the personal retail, because every quadrant has a big state in it,
right?
And you know, you could, you know, because that's anyway. So I hate the way I've never understood why it does that.
Why not just have a, you know, extra Super Tuesday where every state does it?
Well, that's a whole other, yeah. That's another.
I mean, you know, we all. federalist system. Every state's got their own rules and stuff, but it does seem like for at least presidential elections, we should maybe all do it the same way.
Right.
But maybe I'm a simpleton. Kyle, as we wrap up, I've got a lightning round of questions for you.
Okay.
I have four questions. And you can pass. I'll let you pass.
When have you passed?
Right.
Whether I've taken bullets or not, I've taken the heat, so go ahead.
What keeps you up at night, either excited or anxious?
Anxious.
Okay. What is it that keeps you up?
I am concerned for our country. Because, my kids, I was an 80s kid and loved it. And, I am concerned the way that our politics is going. And I hope that it changes in a sense that, I don't know what lies for my kids.
Yeah.
And I try to keep them involved in politics to where they're knowledgeable, but not enough to where they get into it.
Yeah.
And I've got 16-year-old to 5-year-old. So I've got, anyway, so that I would say anxious more than anything.
Yeah. Fair enough. And for someone whose job is to analyze sentiment, that's a heavy statement. Do you have a favorite metric or secret signal that you watch regularly?
Politics? Well, I will kind of the key to watching on. Okay, so everybody's going to have their favorite polls come out. Okay, it's one of those things where the saying or bumper sticker is, if you didn't pay for the poll, don't trust it.
Uh-huh.
And the reason behind that is the person, an internal poll, has more to lose than a public poll.
Right.
Because their job and their career is hinges on being correct. So when people have come out and been critical of our most recent poll with McCall, they've made the point of saying that, it's an internal poll or whatever. Okay, first off, it's the most historically accurate pollster in the state of Oklahoma, right. Number one. And number two, let's take that poll out. Let's take our poll away. Let's just look at the other polls that have been publicly available. Just look at the trends. McCall, in January, was at 3%. Where is he now? 30, 40? Okay, so who has the positive momentum there?
Right.
McCall. Who's gone from over 50 to mid-30s? Well, that's Drummond. And why is that? Well, that's why. So if a poll, what always sets a red flag for me, if someone doesn't put out the methodology that they use and they don't put out their entire instrument,
yeah,
meaning the entire questions, you can jury rig a poll.
Right.
You can put up 4 or 5 negative questions and then ask them ask them the ballot, hey, here's 5 things negative about someone, now who you support.
Right.
Well, that's misleading.
Right.
That's what's in the market called a push poll. Well, that's what's done a lot in the state of Oklahoma.
Interesting. I was looking at a pollster, one of our Oklahoma pollsters the other day, trying to find something to make the case, and I couldn't find a methodology or anything about it. It was just a post about it. And I was I don't have enough information here to use this reliably.
Yep.
So
yep.
That's fair. If I may make the title of this episode, if you didn't pay for the poll, don't trust it. What's one polling myth you wish would die?
People saying, I've never been polled, so I don't trust polling. I literally was on social media this morning, and a friend of mine that I went to Sunday school with posted something about, well, I don't trust any pollster because I've never been polled. Okay, there's 4 million people in the state of Oklahoma,
right.
Half of them Republican, or more, actually no more, 50-some% Republican. Really, there's that, you're going to, 2 million people,
right.
You're upset because you personally have been polled.
Right.
That's all.
Right.
And so, I haven't yet looked that person up. I probably will. If you don't vote,
right.
You're not going to get polled.
Right.
If you're not, it's done. It's kind of you're not going to jury duty unless you redo your driver's license.
Right.
That's how they do it.
Right.
And if you don't vote, you're not going to get polled.
You don't put your name in the hat. They can't draw it out. You can't win the lottery if you don't play.
That's right.
you're probably not going to win anyway, but
that's right. I only play when it gets to like 500 million.
I do the same thing. 650 is mine. So okay. I bought a Mega Millions the other day, didn't win, got another chance on Saturday. If I'm willing to spend the $5, wait, we got a shot. My wife is at the point now, candidly, where she's like, I'm just ready to retire. If you want to spend $5, go for it. Maybe it'll work out for both of us.
Well, you're better. I don't even tell my wife. I'll tell her if I win.
Yeah, that's right. That's funny. Inbox or social media, which one do you think is more predictive in your view?
Social media. Because, inbox, you can get thousands of junk, whatever, whether it's solicited or not.
Yeah.
Social media, people post what they believe. They may not, you know, and it may be under a pseudonym.
Oh, I think it's funny because you say that, and I guarantee people are listening to this going, no way. But we probably do. We just don't realize it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Because, like, for instance, a project we did before, you know, Kevin Durant had several burner accounts. He posted what he believed. They were just different people.
Yeah. How interesting. That reminds me, this is not one of my lightning round questions I wrote down, but
sure.
People always talk about yard signs for candidates. Say yard signs don't vote.
Right.
But they do express sentiment in some way. What do you think about yard signs?
I think yard signs are important in people's yards. On the corner or whatever, it's trash. I don't care. And whatever. In people's yards. Like, if there's an election in a state senate or state house race, the best barometer you can tell is driving through. And because, like, I know the Trump households in Quail Creek because I know they put up Trump signs or whatever. And, like, we went through a state senate race last year or whatever, and I could tell, okay, it's going to be Kelly Hines, it's going to be Jenny Schmidt, because those two were the ones that had the most yard signs in people's yards.
Yeah.
That's why it matters.
Right.
A lot of times it's really just momentum. And candidates, as one, a former one, candidates have their ego, and if they see it, it helps them.
Right.
So people, I've had consultants say, don't waste anything on yard signs. Okay, that's an extreme position. And then another one is they mean everything. It's kind of somewhere in the middle. The campaign team volunteers like seeing them.
Yeah.
And then the candidates do as well.
There's a congressional candidate right now there's a yard sign in my neighborhood, but it's not in their district.
Yeah.
So I know it's a supporter. And at first I was like, well, they can't vote for you. Well, yeah, but we're a year out from the election. That yard sign right now is telling everyone who drives by and all the neighbors that this candidate is worthy of that person's attention. And so maybe it's worthy of our attention. Like, it might be something that someone Googles or whatever.
Yep.
I wouldn't be surprised to start seeing like more QR codes on yard signs to help people facilitate information exchange.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
How interesting. I also have heard of consultants telling volunteers to be sure to put yard signs on the route that the candidate takes, like from their house to the Capitol, just to make them feel okay about
it.
Or the opponent, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Making sure that,
The psychological warfare is always fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Kyle, I think that's all the questions I have for today. Is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you want to highlight about?
You know, I think that the governor's race is going to be the most hotly contested one in a generation.
Yeah.
Because I think you've got three multimillionaires that are going to spend millions of dollars. And I think it's going to make a world of difference. And so, anyway.
Yeah, I think 2026 is going to be a really big year for Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And it means it's very important for voters to make sure the registration's up to date, to make sure that everyone in their household and their friends and neighbors are registered, and to turn out, because it really will come down to turnout.
And you also, because you're going to have minimum wage in November, right? I think that's right.
And no, it's in June.
Okay, so.
But probably open primaries.
I was going to say, okay, so the open primaries will be in November. So that'll be interesting. So,
yeah, be a lot of stuff.
And which you've already
knows what the legislature will refer to the ballot next year. So there may be other other questions on there.
That's true. So,
yeah. Well, Kyle Lovis, thanks so much for being
here. Glad to do it anytime.
Listeners, thank you for being here as well. As always, you probably heard a lot about data and analytics during this conversation. I want to remind you that decisions are made by those who show up. As Kyle said, that might be how you show up online. You're your sentiments might betray you or perhaps accurately reflect your opinion. And I think that tells us that's important, right? That sometimes it is valuable to post how we feel because it informs Kyle's work, which might inform the White House. So, but as you said, more importantly, get out there and talk to your neighbors. Volunteer with campaigns. Go door-to-door yourself. Talk to your neighbors about what's happening in your community. Find ways to show up.
I'll show you the plaque.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. I was hoping to do it in the conference.